You are listening to Embodied People, a podcast co-hosted by Sarah Donahue and myself, Colleen Wall. We are both somatic movement educators and dance professors. We are also faculty at Integrated Movement Studies. In this podcast, we explore all things embodied. We explore anatomy, we explore meaning, metaphor, and how we make sense of out of our lives through our bodies. We also talk about developmental motor patterning, how it affects our psychological and emotional and psychic states as adults. And we really love to offer you movement practices and meditations that deepen your experience of your body so that your body is a generative place for you in your life. That is, it helps guide you towards and supports you in living the life that is most fulfilling for you. This podcast is sponsored by Integrated Movement Studies, and that is a certification program in the Laban-Bartynieff Movement Studies system. And if you'd like more information on Integrated Movement Studies and what the Laban-Bartynieff system is, beyond what we offer in this podcast, you can check out our website, imsmovement.com. Hey, Colleen here, and I'm doing a solo mini-sode, and I am going to be following up on the one that Sarah did last on head-tail patterning. But before we jump into it, I want to begin by saying that I spent the last, about 10 days in Salt Lake City, and I was there for the 2023-2024 Integrated Movement Studies Certification Program. We have 3 7-day immersions, and so we are in the studio all day learning and moving Laban-Bartynieff movement studies, the theories and practices, and especially the practices, including things like touch for repatterning and Laban scales. And so I was out there for one of their 7-day immersions, and we are coming towards the end of this certification program. We started in May 2023 with some online content and 4 weeks together in the summer in Alfred, New York, and then 7 days in October, 7 days in January, and now we had the 7 days in March, and then we'll have 4 more weeks in Alfred, New York, and have a new class of certified Laban-Bartynieff movement analysts. And what was really exciting and gratifying for me while I was out there, among many things, was seeing reflected in the students who have been studying this perspective at a graduate level, seeing how much moving in this way and moving in a way that integrates movement and then theory, and that they're coming together in like living practice in one's moving body, how it changes them. Like they are, and they're not even done yet, but to increasingly see how there's a energy of coherence, of coming together, of thinking and moving as totally connected, and connected in a way that people are developing more resources and skills in themselves to use movement as a way to use movement in their moving bodies to move towards a life that reflects increasingly what they want for themselves. And we were also working a lot with Charlie Johnston's creative systems theory, which is a systems theory on how living things shift and grow and change over time, which is a teaching and learning model that it's really an overarching frame for the whole Integrated Movement Studies training program. But now they're learning more about it and seeing sort of how their learning experiences have been shaped by it, and then using it as a way to navigate their application projects and also change in their lives. Life is a creative process. Life is a being alive, moving from birth through to death in human form is an experience of a creative process, full with its wanting to moments of wanting to get rid of it altogether, and other moments of incredible inspiration, and other moments of like feeling really polished and like things have come together. And so that's what I've been doing. And so it's off on the heels of that, that I feel very tired. I'm very excited to bring you this mini-sode. So in the last two episodes, Sarah and I have taken turns. And two episodes ago, I did one on core distal connectivity. So that was really the pattern about that focuses on the center of the body. And then the six distal edges, hands, feet, head and tail. And it differentiates center from edges, and then also how movement is organized through pathways of connection between the center and edge, kind of in a psychological me, not me way. And after that, Sarah did an episode on head-tail connectivity. And so the head-tail pattern of total body connectivity is about the head end of the spine and the tail end of the spine, and the central vertical organizing sort of throughness of the body. And she talked a lot about the head-tail as this pathway or sort of superhighway between the brain, like the body's like processing system, and the body itself and all the sensory motor experiences that we have. And so today we're going to move from head-tail, which you may notice as you listen to this, that you can have a very soft, supple spine, a spine that's fluid and adaptable. You can also have a very rigid and held spine, maybe one that's lengthened into like the pull the head upward into space, something like axial extension. Or you could have it rigid, like folding forward, like you're being pulled into your phone. But from your spine, you grow limbs. So like an inner snake might be an image for the head-tail pattern. Your inner snake grows two arms at the head end and two legs at the tail end. And as you grow two arms at the head end, you suddenly have three limbs of your upper. And as you grow two legs at your tail end, you have three limbs of your lower. And what separates the upper and lower is something around the waist. And so it's with that in mind that we can get started. You may notice that the upper body and the lower body participate in fairly different activities. So the lower body, you stand on your legs. Most of us walk through the world, so we locomote via the three limbs of the upper. I go from sitting on the couch to standing on my legs, and then I move myself into the kitchen or from my office into a meeting. The lower body takes us somewhere new. It allows us to get from one place to the next. Well, the three limbs of the upper, you might imagine, are a bit more expressive. So the hands tend to be a place that we communicate from. So if, say you're talking with a friend at a coffee shop, or communicating to colleagues at work, you may use your hands and your gestures to help reveal what something means. You also may place your hands on the wrist of a loved one as a way to connect with them. So there's an expressivity, a communicativeness that is really part of the arm end of the upper. And then if you think about this, the face, the head end, it's also highly communicative. Eyes allow you to see and sense and connect to the world. You take it in. You also communicate ideas through your eyes. The mouth, the nose, the ears. These are sense organs that allow us really concrete, specific ways of making sense out of perceiving, sensing, perceiving, and communicating with the world around us. And so the upper and lower are fairly different in that sense. The lower body, it moves us through space. The upper body tends to be more expressive, maybe more pliable. And so the structures of these upper and lower bodies are also fairly similar and fairly different. Your feet usually have 27 bones in each foot. No, excuse me. Let me start that again. Feet usually have 26 bones in each foot, and the hands have 27 bones. That's kind of interesting. The hands do have more three-dimensional movement than the feet. The feet are more stable. They tend to be more about being grounded. The hands tend to be more mobile. They're more able to adapt to and shape the world around us. So again, 26 bones in the feet, 27 bones in the hands. The lower leg has two bones that rotate a little bit around each other, the tibia and the fibula. And the forearm has also two bones, radius and ulnar, that create a lot of the rotation that we would call rotation in our wrists. And then there's one big bone as we get closer to the waist and the legs. And then there's one big bone in the upper arm as we get closer to the shoulder. Huh. That's interesting. So we have 27, 26, 2, 2, 1, 1. And then we move into the shoulders, girdle, and the pelvis, which do have a likeness as well. And then they're brought together through the head tail. So we see some similarities, and we also see some distinctions between the upper and the lower body. Now, one of the things that happens developmentally, and I want to take a minute to talk about this, is that the infant, on a motor development level, the infant can't immediately tell one limb of the upper to do something or tell one leg to do something. So at this point, they're in what's called a homologous motor pattern, which is that when the message to go up goes to an arm, it actually goes to both arms and the eyes. So all three limbs of the upper might reach into space because they haven't yet developed the ability to differentiate to just one hand. Or it's similar with the lower body. They can't quite say left leg through their mind, left leg push down. So both legs kind of push and the tail kind of push into the ground. And you'll see this in young infants as they do some like revving and rocking from the three limbs of the upper, or they kind of push their bounce on their legs and push their legs into the ground like they're getting ready to get their motor fired up, but it's going into both legs. And this is a... I've mentioned that this is called homologous motor pattern. We also see it a lot in the adult world and things like a lot of fitness where you do like push press lower, the limbs of the lower push down and then the limbs of the upper go up into space as you push a bar over your head. So homologous motor patterning, it can feel satisfying, like you've done some hard work. I also can feel like you're getting ready to do something. My dog, who's getting a little bit older, I see her do it. I think as she's getting older, she's losing some of her really beautiful reach into spiral cross laterality. And when she's very excited for her food, she'll go two paws forward from the front and then the two behind catch up. And she goes boop, 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 front, back, all the way to her food bowl. And she's just started doing that in the last little bit. She's probably about 12 or so, and maybe in the last 6 months have I noticed that's becoming more common. So that will be an earlier part of motor development that we still as adults do, and it can feel really good. So at this point, we've established a sense of differentiation between lower and upper, both in terms of structure and in terms of how they operate, how they serve us in the world, and also that there's a differentiation between lower and upper in human motor development. That eventually, especially in the Laban-Bartynieff work, what becomes important when we think about upper or lower connectivity and work with it is that they don't just stay differentiated, but that movement begins to travel through the body. So from the lower through the upper in a connected, patterned, supportive way. And it's in that way that you get a sense that the body is organized lower through to upper, such that the support from the lower body travels through or is capable of, continues to support the body as you move through the waist, through the shoulders, through to the senses of the head and in the arms. So there's a fluid connection of support, a sense of messaging between lower body and upper body. So that the differentiation then also becomes a pattern of connection. And one of the really early remarkable people in the field of the Laban Bartynyov work was somebody named Irmgard Bartynyov. And my understanding of Irmgard, we were not on the planet at the same time, but my understanding of Irmgard was that one of her just geniuses was that she could figure out in her toolbox how to get somebody to do something in movement that they didn't even know they could do. So maybe she worked with adults who had had polio, for example, and she could get them standing when they didn't know they could stand, or flying through space, walking and running through space when they didn't know that they could, by working with images or sounding, intention. And while she had the background as a physical therapist and the background in the Laban work, she knew how to use everything she knew anatomically, physiologically, developmentally, to motivate people and mobilize them towards places they didn't know how to go. And not by saying, use your hamstring, but by finding the images and the intent and the oomph to get them to do that. But Irmgard's, my understanding is that Irmgard's students wanted some really specific tools. Like, they wanted some specific movement resources that were kind of like, maybe you could think of them as some of her gems that would help them take what they were learning and seeing with her and translate it into their own working with people. And so it's from that that we have some exercises called the Basic Six. And these are exercises that you might see a version of these in a physical therapy clinic, say you've torn a labrum in your hip and you need some rehab. So these include things like isolating the femoral joint, so that's the big leg bone into the pelvis, and being able to find stability on one leg, so like stabilizing the leg you're standing on down into the earth, so that you can mobilize and isolate the movement of the legs into the pelvis. So these exercises are the Basic Six, like that one, femoral flexion and extension, or pelvic shifting both side to side and forward back. These focus on teaching you how to connect lower body through to upper body in a way that supports you getting mobilized, motivated, moving out through the world. And one of the things that Irmgard, the reason I'm telling you any of this, one of the things that Irmgard noticed was that people have a tendency to lock off movement where their legs meet their pelvis, so at around the area of the femoral joint, where the legs thread into the bottom of the torso, the pelvis. And instead of moving from the lowest part of the pelvis and moving from that joint, they tend to move from either their lower back or their knees. And these are places that we actually don't want to be putting a ton of movement. And so because we've locked off our femoral joint, we put the movement in other parts of our body. And that tends to trash the lower back or the knees. So something that I often see happening in my one-on-one work with clients is that they, instead of being able to isolate and work through a connectivity, legs through to pelvis, through to upper, and not doing that, they've deadened the pelvic floor, reduced function there, and then they get patterns of pain in the lower back and knees, which seem like knee pain, and then they want to work there, or seem like lower back pain. But really, what could be really beneficial and is in a lot of these cases is working at the femoral joint, working to create movement between the legs and the pelvis. They're very simple. The Basic Six are like the most basic prototypical exercises that a body can do. And so the idea is that by getting something into its simplest level, like its simplest, most elements, that we can study it and practice it and then integrate that back into a fully functioning human body for better function. So the basic six, they are one place that upper lower is practiced and refined. I know Sarah, on her shoveling episode a couple weeks ago, she talks a lot about femoral suction extension. And that episode is just full of gems on upper-lower connectivity. I think that that's the biggest, most important things about lower through to upper. It's interesting because I've tried to make this a pretty short episode. But upper lower is probably one of the most complex and most challenging patterns for people, exactly because of what I was just saying, which is the lack of movement through the base of the pelvis and between the legs and the pelvis. So the ideas that are and movements that are part of upper lower patterning are threaded throughout so many of the episodes that we have made so far. The yield, push, reach, pull episode has a lot of underlying upper lower possibilities as well. So now that I've given you a bunch of ideas, I think the last thing that I'm going to talk you through is, if you'll do this with me, stand if you can on your feet. You can close your eyes and notice the feet spreading, especially between the big toes and the pinky toes, into the floor. And then notice the length between the toes and the heels. Soften your legs, especially your knees and ankles, a little bit. Now, take your hands and start from the inside of the arches and trace a pathway of connection, so a sense of throughness from the legs into your lower belly. And then from your lower belly, imagine sending touch or an imaginary line of connection from your lower belly to the back underneath your heart. And then that line comes up from the back of your heart around your head into your chest. And then from your chest, it goes back to your lower back. And then you can use your hands to trace from your sits bones or the bottom of your pelvis, right down the back of your legs to your heels and out your feet. And so what we've just done is we've traced around your body a whole figure eight that starts from the feet, up the inside of the legs, through the lower belly to the back of the heart, up and around the head from the chest, through your belly to your lower back and down the back of your legs. And this figure eight, while it very much teaches you about core support, the sense of the center of your body supporting movement through the rest of it, it also gets you feeling the connection, the pathway of throughness from your lower body through the center of you up into your upper and then back. So that's a really, I think, vital. That's a place that can have a lot of vitality and potential for movement. We're coming from an alignment like this, an alignment vertically through yourself into gravity, that it can feel easier to then move and motivate and move your body out into the world. So there you have it, a pathway, a figure eight from your legs up through your head and back down through your legs. And then if you wanted to, you could add some sense of your upper body, like your arms. And so I guess the last thing I will say about this is that there's a muscle known as your psoas major that is like an internal, it's like an internal support from the legs, inside of your legs, your lesser trochanters, up through to the middle of your spine. And then overlapping that, but more at the back of you, are your latissimus dorsi that takes your pelvis all the way through your back and connects that to your arms right about where your armpits are. And so that's like this internal to external support for lower through to upper. So the line of the psoas major is the top of the leg bone in the pelvis to the middle of your spine. And then the back of your pelvis, you have these wings called your lats that go up to your arms. And we've done episodes that focus on both of these, but that's like the internal support structure that takes your arms out into the world. You might even imagine it's like your soul could fly. And it's with that that thank you so much for making it all the way through, up or lower. And I think hopefully we've got some really good episodes coming up, so you will be hearing more from us soon. Bye.